Ecologist Daniel Jansen is a man with a mission. His dream is to rebuild a tropical forest in the northwest of Costa Rica. For the past 30 years, he has journeyed to a 420-square-mile area of Central America to study how plants and animals interrelate in the tropics. In 1984, Jansen received the Crawford Prize from the Swedish Academy of Sciences. This prize is regarded among biologists as the equivalent of a Nobel Prize. Jansen is a hands-on kind of scientist. He's more content working in the field than in the laboratory. He spends half a year in Costa Rica and the other half teaching at the University of Pennsylvania. I asked him why it's important to preserve plant and animal diversity.
The first way that animal and plant diversity is of real interest to humans is that we do not exist by ourselves. We exist by eating, making use of as commercial products, and by direct aesthetic and intellectual involvement with all these different things. If we reduce those down to a very few species, then we are confronted with a very, very impoverished array of things from which to choose what we want to use. Now, at the present time, all of the Earth's crops and, well, crops and animals that we use for food, if you take all of those, probably 25 species, maybe 30 species cover the bulk, the vast majority of what we eat and use. What we're saying then is if we just write off the rest of the species, what we're saying is that our ancestors 5,000 years ago, when they picked out those 20, 30, 40 species of animals and plants, did the best possible job of selecting what was out there, which is, of course, absurd.
You're saying, though, that the human species could survive, but it would survive in a very constricted and different kind of way than it has
That's
survived
true.
Before.
I think it could, just like cows survive in a field. You can take a cow, put it in a field of alfalfa, and raise it generation after generation after generation. The question is, do we want to be cows in a field of alfalfa?
But I think people often don't connect that idea of being a cow in a field with alfalfa with saving a forest in Costa Rica.
That's right, because a lot of people, one, don't realize the global nature of our contact. You see, we sit down here, we go into the A&P, and we buy all these groceries. And you come home with a wide variety of things and makes you happy for your meals and all that sort of thing. Now, let's take that list of groceries and ask what fraction of it came from the tropics.
Right.
Well, it turns out that about 80% of the species that you eat are tropical in origin. And people, I think, often don't realize this. Just take breakfast, for example.
Right.
It's coffee and tea and sugar, cinnamon, eggs, citrus, pork, anything from a chicken, milk, beans, any product made from corn, like cornflakes or anything like that. And that's just the breakfast part of the day. And if we just go on through the rest of the day, what you discover is a very large number of our crops and the animals that we eat have their historical origins in tropical species, not in temperate zones. If we didn't have the tropics, we'd be living on acorns and rye and wheat.
You spend about half the year in Costa Rica and the other half the year in the States. And when you're in Costa Rica, you're up at dawn and you're exploring and you're gathering. And I'm curious about what you're looking for when you spend the time down there.
What I'm trying to do is come to understand how a particular tropical forest, it's a dry forest in my case, how a particular tropical dry forest functions, meaning what are the interactions between the animals and the plants? What difference does it make if we lose this species or that species, or if we add this species or that species? I'm also trying to understand how it is that if we go out and remove a piece of that forest, you cut it down to make a pasture out of it, for example, or whatever it is, what are the processes that bring that forest back onto that piece of land that you've removed the forest from?
A friend said about you, Jansen is the only person who can fall in a pile of manure and come up with a new species of dung beetle.
Mm-hmm. I think I would answer that by saying that maybe I'm one of those people who, when I fall in the pile of manure, wouldn't be so concerned about getting out as looking to see whether there was a new species of dung beetle in it. I see, my response to the world is curiosity. I mean, I sit and I look around this studio, and my reaction to it is not a hostile environment, even though I don't understand it, but my reaction is sort of why. I'm still an 8-year-old kid, twiddling dials and pulling wires and wondering why these things work. And I've fallen into the fortunate situation in the society where I'm applauded and supported to continue to act like an 8-year-old kid.
Your love of nature, though, really does come from your childhood when you roamed and trapped and...
Sure.
And,
well, I was blessed with a pair of parents who thought that was a legitimate way to spend your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that as I became involved with trapping and collecting butterflies and doing all these kinds of things, they encouraged me to just keep on doing that. So that... And by being encouraged to do that, that made me different from the other kids around me who were being discouraged to do these sorts of things. And again, my parents in the early days did not discourage me from that either. They got worried later on. They didn't feel I was social enough. But early on, they thought that was, again, legitimate for me to spend all my weekends out by myself hunting pheasants or whatever it happened to be.
You're trying to raise money to put back this particular forest in Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of reception have you gotten for your money raising?
Okay, well, there's two things. There's the project itself, which is the actual act of doing it, putting the forest back, training Costa Ricans to be caretakers of that forest, and setting it up administratively so that basically it becomes part of the Costa Rican governmental structure and it's just there forever. I get an extremely favorable response to that, everywhere from audiences in the United States to the general lay public in Costa Rica, to the farmers who are actually involved in actually doing it in Costa Rica. That part, no stumbling blocks, no
right.
problem. The financial response, which is the capital basically to get something like this started and going, is one that has been very puzzling to me, something I don't fully understand. Now, part of this, of course, is my own fault in the sense that as a field biologist all my life, I don't have the connections to the business community, to the corporation community, to the level of people who have the resources to be helpful in a project like this. So I'm sort of left screaming into the wind in a certain sense, saying, hey, we need help, but I don't have the directed focus with individuals that I can go after them.
Are you disheartened?
Not disheartened so much as becoming forced to the realization that unless there's some mechanism by which we can begin to reach out and directly contact individuals who have the resources to help, I don't see where the money's going to come from. And that's where I begin to feel a sense of extreme frustration because biologically we know how to run this project. We have the Costa Ricans to do it. We have the Costa Ricans who want to do it. So I'm left only with a question of where do I find the actual capital to buy the actual dirt, which becomes Costa Rican National Park Service property, on which we actually do the reforestation. And the dirt is sitting there. The owners all want to sell it. And the question is, all right, the circumstances are perfect. Now, where do we find the actual cash to do it?
Do you see yourself as making a very significant contribution to the world of biology, to the understanding of biology, or do you think of yourself in those kinds of terms?
I don't normally think of myself in those kind of terms. If I stood outside of myself and looked at what I've done, honestly, I guess I would have to say, yes, I have made a major contribution. But, you see, the problem is I don't do it in order to make a major contribution, all right? It's not like setting out to solve cancer or setting out to solve AIDS or something like that. I set out to understand how the world works, which is a less focused goal vis-a-vis the economic needs and the medical needs and all these things of humanity. Now, what I find out turns out to be useful to people. That's true. But I don't set out specifically to be explicitly useful to a person. The other half of that is the contribution to be made, I think, looking at what I'll spend the next 20 years doing, which is basically causing this rebuilding of a forest project to occur, so that when I get hit by a car, it continues to run as though I'm not there. I feel that in a certain real sense, that will be a major contribution, even though, again, I'm not doing it for that purpose. I'm doing it because I'm driven to do it.
Well, I want to thank you really a lot for coming in and talking with us today.
Sure. You're very welcome.
Daniel Jansen has just returned to Costa Rica. This is Fresh Air.